Today is Wednesday, November the 27th. Welcome to the award-winning Personal Computer Show. I'm Hank Key. Hurricane storms Helene and Milton have destroyed whole communities in the southeastern United States. You can make a difference. There are still many people in recovery mode. You can play a vital role in helping those affected to recover and rebuild their lives. Your donations to the Red Cross will help deliver essential services and supplies to those in need. Big Tech has been collecting and aggregating your personal data. Do you know how big tech companies and our government are using your personal data? We have been bringing computer news, hardware and software reviews, guest interviews, and news of user group meetings for the past 40-plus years. The Personal Computer Show is a 3-time winner of the prestigious National Computer Press Awards. Our only advocacies are consumerism and the First Amendment. I welcome you, the listeners, to provide feedback as to what you want to hear. Address your suggestions to Hank at pcradioshow.org. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.live, that's PRN.live, streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the program is available on PRN.live on the Internet. You can leave us a message with your questions or comment at hank@pcradioshow.org. Comcast to spin off its cable channels, including MSNBC and CNBC, into separate company. Comcast is planning to spin off most of its cable television networks, including MSNBC and CNBC, into a separate publicly traded company, according to executives with knowledge of the plan. The spin-off was reported by the Wall Street Journal, which first had reported the impending announcement. The spin-off would involve channels also include USA, Oxygen, E!, Sci-Fi, and the Golf Channel. Comcast President Mike Cavanaugh foreshadowed the spin-off during a conference call with investors last month, and he said the company was going to study whether it was a good idea to create a new well-capitalized company that would go to our shareholders, comprised of our cable portfolio networks. The study evidently did not take long. Elon Musk, the world's richest man, could be after MSNBC. Elon Musk has hinted that he could buy left-leaning legacy U.S. media network MSNBC after Donald Trump Jr. jokingly suggested the idea to the world's richest man. Craig Moffett, an analyst with Moffett Nathanson, told Variety that investors have yearned for exactly this, or at least something close to it, for years. Notably, the spinoff would separate MSNBC and CNBC, which are two profitable parts of NBC Universal News Group, away from the core news gathering operation of NBC News. In recent years, NBC has tried to bring its broadcast and cable news operations closer together. Now they may be peeled back apart. Executives are expected to address their vision for how the news breakup will work. The Department of Justice reportedly recommends that Google be forced to sell Chrome. Chrome is the biggest browser in the world, accounting for around 65% of all web traffic. The U.S. Department of Justice will ask a judge to enforce the sale of the Chrome browser. This follows a major ruling in August that found Google had acted illegally to stifle competition and retain its monopoly on online search and advertising. Chrome tracks users, personalizes recommendations, and direct users towards other Google products such as G Suite and Gemini. It is impossible to overstate how important it is to Google's business. Antitrust officials, along with several U.S. states that have joined the case, will ask federal judge Amit Mehta to order Alphabet Inc., Google's parent company, to sell off Chrome. In addition to this, the Department of Justice is said to be seeking further measures relating to Google's Android OS, AI technologies, and data licensing, that is to say, allowing third parties and advertisers to access Google's own search engine data. It is also possible that the judge may decide a sale is not necessary if certain other conditions are met. Finally, there's the question of who could even buy it. The companies that have money to do so, such as Amazon or even Microsoft, might find a Chrome acquisition brings more scrutiny on their own products. The Department of Justice continues to push an agenda that goes beyond the legal issues in this case. The same report claims that Department of Justice decided not to go for the most severe remedy, which would have been forcing it to spin off Android. But the Department of Justice will apparently recommend that Google separate out Android from its other products, such as the Google Play Store. Judge Mehta's August ruling that Google broke antitrust laws is still subject to appeal by Google. At the same time, the judge has scheduled a hearing for April 2025 to hear proposed remedies to Google's behavior, and a final ruling has been scheduled for August 2025. The Windows 11 24H2 update is causing even more problems. The Windows 11 24H2 update has already been giving users a real headache with problems such as bugs for visual layouts and flaws for certain wallpaper apps. And now, as Microsoft confirms in a support document, some people without administrative privileges can't change the time zone in the date and time view, among myriad other issues related to the important Windows 11 update. A Feedback Hub post also reports a time issue after exiting sleep mode, specifically after about one out of every five overnight sleep cycles. There is also a report that the time is not syncing correctly following daylight savings time. Put differently, the update doesn't break the time zone, but only affects the toggle or makes it very difficult to modify it. Switching gears a bit, the issues don't end there, since the Windows 11 24H2 update also brings audio bugs, such as USB audio issues that affect games. Windows latest also spotted a bug that causes problems with sound, which rises to 100% when you use a USB digital audio converter system. Microsoft says this is not the result of any modifications to user policies, permissions, or Windows 11 settings. If you have admin privileges, you won't experience the issue, but Microsoft provides a workaround if you don't. The software giant says you can change the time zone through the date and time section of the Windows control panel. This can be accomplished by opening the Start menu and typing Control Panel, then selecting the top result. Once the control panel appears, you can use a search bar in the upper right of the window to enter Change the Time Zone. Select the top result, or the corresponding window can also be opened directly from the Run dialog by pressing the Windows key and R on your keyboard using the command timedate.cpl. Microsoft confirms it is actively investigating the problems and will provide users with a resolution in the following Windows update. The Windows 11 24H2 update, released in November 2024, has been met with significant criticism due to a variety of problems that users are experiencing. Many have reported that the update is not ready for widespread use, leading to frustrations among those who have attempted to upgrade. Users attempting to install the update may encounter notifications indicating their devices have incompatible drivers, preventing the installation from proceeding. Given the extent of the issues associated with Windows 11 24H2 update, it may be wise for users to delay upgrading until Microsoft addresses these problems. If you are already experiencing issues, consider rolling back to a previous version of Windows until a more stable update is released. While the push for Microsoft to upgrade to Windows 11 continues, the current state of the 24H2 update suggests it may be best to wait for further improvements before making the switch. it is not ready for prime time. An end to rebooting after every Windows update. An end to rebooting? Microsoft's latest change means you won't need to restart your work laptop for every Windows update anymore. Rebootless updates are coming to Windows 11 at last, for some users. Being caught by an unexpected Windows update that reboots your PC without warning could soon be a thing of the past, thanks to a new launch from Microsoft. In what will be a welcome news to anyone who has ever had work interrupted by an unexpected Windows update, the company's finally introducing rebootless updates, but only for some users. The new hot patch updates will mean that Windows 11 Enterprise and 365 security updates will be able to be downloaded and installed via the existing Windows Updates program, meaning there's no need to stop what you're doing for a reboot. Hot patch updates are scoped and provide a complete set of OS security patches. No additional features are included. Microsoft's Dave Callaghan noted in a blog post confirming the new changes coming to Windows 11 Enterprise version 24H2. They are unique in that they take effect immediately upon installation without requiring you to restart your device, helping to ensure focused, rapid protection. Patching reduces the amount of system downtime for each restart for any security patch, as they update the in-memory code, meaning a reboot is not required, lowering the workload impact, but also meaning updates install faster and consume less disk and CPU resources due to less binaries being required. The company also noted some of the other benefits of hot patching, including better protection due to hot patch update packages being scoped to Windows security updates that install faster without requiring you to restart your machine, as well as reducing the time exposed to security risk and change windows, and easier patch orchestration with Azure Update Manager. Microsoft has been experimenting with hot patch updates for some time now, with the tool available for Windows Server 2022 Data Center. Azure Edition since February 2022, as well as a newer Windows Server 2025. There's no news about whether other editions of Windows will be included. Windows 11 Home and Pro users may have to wait a little longer, but for now, business and enterprise users will be able to enjoy a rebootless update process. With hot patch updates, you can quickly take measures to help protect your organization from the evolving landscape of cyber attacks while minimizing user disruptions, Callaghan added. Hot patching represents a significant advancement in our journey to help make you and everyone who uses Windows more secure and productive. Well, how about most of your other Windows 11 Home and Pro users? Microsoft, we can't wait forever. Microsoft Copilot growing pains. Microsoft shipped its AI-powered chatbot, Copilot, formerly called Bing Chat, over 1 year ago. The tech giant has enjoyed considerable success in the AI landscape, climbing to the top of the ranks and becoming the world's most valuable company ahead of Apple and Nvidia with a $3 trillion market capitalization. However, recent reports indicate that Microsoft might have made a misstep with its latest Copilot update. The tech giant shipped a major update to the AI chatbot in October, overhauling its experience arm and inviting user interface and immersive chat experience and new features, including Copilot Vision. Users have blatantly expressed disappointment with a new update, citing a degraded user experience and low-quality responses. Some have indicated they prefer the previous version. Some have requested a toggle button that would allow them to switch back. The feedback comes as reports of scaling laws flood the internet, indicating top AI labs, including OpenAI, Google and Anthropic, are struggling to develop advanced AI models due to a lack of high-quality content for training. Perhaps Microsoft might be in the same boat. Perhaps more interestingly, Even Microsoft insiders have raised concerns over Copilot's trajectory, indicating the new update has absolutely ruined the experience while referring to it as a step back. According to a Microsoft employee with close ties to the company's Copilot AI division, this was said, "There's a gap between the ambitious vision and what users are actually experiencing. Internally, we're calling it growing pains. We are building the planes as we fly it." As you may know, Microsoft has deeply integrated its Copilot AI technology across its tech stack, including Microsoft 365. You can leverage its capabilities in software apps like PowerPoint, Outlook, and more. However, a Microsoft insider revealed that the company outsources aid from third-party vendors to make the AI dream work in these apps. While speaking to Business Insider, a high-ranking Microsoft executive indicated that most Copilot AI tools are seemingly gimmicky. Microsoft claims its heavy investment in AI and Copilot efforts are already paying off. The company attributed its claims to Copilot users purchasing additional access to the tool. While the claims remain to be seen, security and privacy continue to deter the progression of AI, prompting users to keep the technology at arm's length. Organizations are reportedly reluctant to integrate the tool into their workflow because of the tool's capabilities to bypass critical security measures and access private credentials that would ordinarily require high-level clearance. As such, an employee with access to the tool could gain access to private information. A Microsoft employee corroborated the sentiments, indicating the tool works really darn well at sharing information that the customer doesn't want to share or didn't think it had made available to its employee, such as salary information. Perhaps more concerning, the employees indicated that the issue wasn't an easy fix. It could take years. However, the tech giant has several measures in place, including developing tools to help consumers manage permission access at scale. Additionally, the company will release a guide addressing oversharing when using AI. It will also include best practices for managing data securely. To this end, there are no signs of Microsoft hitting the brakes on its Copilot efforts, according to a Microsoft insider. There is a delusion on our marketing side where literally everything has been renamed to have Copilot in it. Everything is Copilot. Nothing else matters. They want a Copilot tie-in for everything. It will be interesting to see how Microsoft addresses the concerns raised about its Copilot efforts as uncertainty in the landscape continues to brew. If you haven't been on Copilot yet, you're the lucky one. Can't upgrade to Windows 11? Buy a new PC, says Microsoft. Windows 10's official support is ending in October 2025, and Microsoft would be delighted if you just finally upgrade to Windows 11. The operating system restrictive minimum requirements means that not all Windows 11 users can upgrade. What is Microsoft doing about this? Telling people to buy a new PC, of course. Microsoft is stepping up its campaign to transition users from Windows 10 to Windows 11. If you happen to not have an upgrade available for Windows 11, Microsoft is now employing full-screen prompts encouraging you to please consider buying one of all the new Windows 11 PCs that are currently being sold. These prompts, which have been appearing on Windows 10 machines over the past weeks, highlighted the benefits of doing more with a new Windows 11 PC and leveling up to the new Copilot Plus PCs. Clicking on the provided links direct users to a promotional website showcasing the latest Windows 11 devices. Notably absent from these prompts is any mention of the extended security updates, that's the ESU option, for Windows 10. Consumers can, in fact, continue using Windows 10 securely beyond the October 2025 cutoff by paying $30 per year for the ESU, which is the extended security updates. If you can't upgrade to a new computer at this very moment, taking one of these ESUs is probably the best thing you can do. Microsoft is pretty nosy about telling people to update to the newest operating system. But telling people to buy a new Windows 11 PC is a different kind of thing. You'll eventually have to do it even if you take all the extended security updates. You'll still be left with nothing to upgrade at the end of them, unless you're willing to move off Windows entirely. They should be seen as a band-aid more than a permanent solution. You can finally try out Windows 11 Recall option. After a tumultuous initial reaction and 6 months of reworking, Microsoft is finally releasing the first preview of its controversial Recall feature today. If you're a Windows insider with a Qualcomm Copilot PC, you can install a new build of Windows 11 that includes both Recall and Click to Do. If you're not a part of the Windows Insider program, but you want to try out this feature, it's pretty easy to sign up on the Microsoft website. Recall was first announced back before any of the Copilot Plus PCs were released and was meant to be available at launch, but an outcry of privacy and security concerns forced Microsoft to delay it. The feature itself is meant to give your PC a photographic memory, allowing you to search for anything you've seen on your screen using natural language. To make it work, the feature takes constant snapshots of what you're doing on your PC, and it was the security of these snapshots that got people worried. According to the Windows Insider blog, it seems you will have to authenticate with Windows Hello every time you open Recall. This will certainly make it feel secure, but could also get a little annoying. As for how secure it really is, there will hopefully be plenty of security professionals searching through the feature's updated security and privacy architecture and hopefully sharing any issues they find through Microsoft's bug bounty program. You can also control which snapshots are saved and which apps are allowed to take snapshots in the first place. Microsoft also claims that it cannot access your screenshots, doesn't send them to the cloud, and won't use them for AI training. The Click to Do feature within Recall allows you to complete the actions from the snapshots, such as copying text or saving images. If you don't like the sound of Recall, you don't need to worry about it coming to all Windows PCs yet. But when it does, Microsoft promises that you'll be able to fully uninstall the feature if you want to. Presenting the IT Pro Series with Benjamin Rockwell.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and a lot of that in between. And this past week, there was a re-interview of a gentleman off in India. He is an owner of a company and a founder of the company, rather. And he said, basically, for work-life balance, 70-hour work weeks are ideal. 70 hours a week. I'll get into that in a minute. But first, let's unpack who this person is. Now, you're thinking, okay, what are we talking about? We're talking about some small company off in India. We're talking about some company that maybe has a few thousand employees, maybe even as many as 10,000. Okay, they employ a lot of people sometimes in India, so maybe it's even 15,000. No, when we start talking about company sizes, when we start looking at them, this company is the number 47 employer in the world. They have roughly 320,000 employees around the world. You know, we start thinking about some of these larger companies that employ a lot of people, like Walmart at 2.1 million and Amazon at 1.5 million. So we start going down the line. 47th on that list is this company. This is not an insignificant company. You may have heard their name before. It's Infosys. And the founder's name, Narayama Murthy. So 70 hours is work-life balance to him. I I saw that, and having burned out, I burned out a number of years ago, and I've put that past behind me, and it was shocking to me at the age that I burned out. I was not expecting to burn out, but then again, I was working a matter of 12 to 16 hours a day, Monday through Friday. I had a 1 hour each way commute. And then I was also putting in a number of hours on Saturday, generally about 10. And then on Sunday, maybe 6 to 8 hours. So yes, I was burning the candle at both ends and did not have a whole lot of time for my wife and my son. Let's unpack those numbers. Let's think about that kind of work day. So for starters, 70 hours a week, that's 10 hours a day, every day, 7 days a week. But let's bump that up. Let's just take it to 6 days a week, 70 hours a week. What does that result in? Yeah, roughly a 12-hour day, Monday through Saturday. That's a lot of hours. Let's take one of those days. Let's just break that down. So 24 hours. And then we're going to subtract 12 hours. You're working every day, for those 6 days. And then you're going to subtract, let's subtract just 1 hour for commute, the half hour each way. And let's subtract 8 hours for our sleep every night. Let's subtract out another hour for basic lunch at the office. So let's also subtract out, yes, time to get up and prepare for your day, have a meal, have a nighttime meal before going to bed, your shower, everything you do, all of that has to come in that because you only have 1 more hour left, 1 hour to spend with your wife, your family. At a certain point, we need to think about this. We need to think about what kind of life that leaves behind. I'll tell you, to me, that reeks of slavery. That reeks of the idea that your life is work, to work constantly. Oh, yes, you get Sunday off. Maybe, maybe because this company does a lot of contract work around the world. Maybe you might only get a Saturday off. Maybe you get a Wednesday off to do everything else in your life because that 1 hour isn't going to be enough. That 1 hour a day for the remaining days, that's nothing. That's a drop in the bucket. This Narayama Murthy has an idea that he feels that he needs to research by pushing everybody at his company, at least that he can legally push, for the next 20 to 30 years. He's actually stated he doesn't even believe in work-life balance. He basically believes that all Indian citizens need to work these kinds of hours to make India successful. And, of course, him. So he's the founder of the company. He is no longer the CEO. There are other people who are driving the company forward, but he's still part of this company. He's still pushing this along because, yes, he is in one of the largest companies in the world. So let's think about this. Let's apply the worst case scenario constantly in our thoughts as to what people are thinking out there, that we should all be beholden to them for our jobs and we should rely on them to decide what is our balance, what is our work-life balance overall. This is rather shameful. I can't even believe he would say this. This is Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. Legacy audio brands could disappear by 2025 as sales crash. Parent companies report massive financial losses in their audio divisions. Major audio brands may not survive another year as parent companies struggle to stay afloat. Some of the biggest names in the audio industry are in trouble, as Massimo and Vox International, parent companies of legacy audio brands, struggle with mounting losses. Denon, Marantz, Klipsch, and Pioneer could disappear from stores by 2025, marking the end of decades-long leadership in high-end sound. Massimo is the parent company of Bowers and Wilkins, Denon, Marantz, Boston Acoustics, and more. Vox International, on the other hand, is the parent company of Klipsch, Acoustic Research, Pioneer, Onkyo, and others. Why is this happening? The pandemic created a surge in home audio sales as people built home offices and upgraded their living spaces. But those golden days are over. Since 2022, sales have crashed up to 30% in some cases. For example, Vox International's consumer electronics dropped by 35%, partly because people aren't spending like they used to. Even turntables, which were flying off the shelves during lockdown, are now collecting dust in the warehouses. With inflation hitting hard, high-end audio gear has become a luxury item that many can't justify. The problems run deeper than just sales. Massimo, a medical tech company, lacks the expertise to run an audio business. They're experts at hospital equipment, but high-end speakers are a different game entirely. Vox faces similar challenges. They can't even make Pioneer products anymore because of licensing issues. Basically, managing multiple classic brands under one corporate umbrella has only added to their struggles, spreading resources thin and diluting brand identities. In the changing consumer market, consumer preferences have also changed dramatically. Young music fans prioritize convenience over traditional hi-fi setups. They're not looking for massive speaker setups anymore. Instead, they look for portable, budget-friendly solutions that fit their lifestyle better. Serious audiophiles are turning to vintage equipment, which often matches or exceeds new products in quality and value. Some Chinese manufacturers have come in to offer the same things luxury audio brands do, but at less cost. So customers have been leaning towards them more in recent years. What's going to happen next? The future of these legacy audio brands remains uncertain. Massimo has marked January 2025 as their decision deadline for their audio division's fate. Their board hasn't finalized any plans yet, but the options on the table range from the completely shutting down of operations to spinning off the brands into separate companies. Vox International is taking a different approach to survival. They started selling off pieces of their audio empire to cut down their debt, which now stands under $20 million. For instance, the Jamo and Energy brands have already gone to a Chinese buyer. Pioneer's situation is particularly tough, though. They had to stop making their elite and esoteric products worldwide after losing key licensing deals. Because of this, offers to buy the brand have been too low for Vox to accept. However, the real concern isn't just these brands will survive, but what they'll become. They could end up split apart, absorbed by bigger companies, or turn into budget brands that share nothing but a name with their former glory. The most frustrating part for loyal customers? Many of these brands still make great products, but corporate struggles, not product quality, might determine whether your next receiver will have that familiar Denon, Marantz, or Lips logo on the front panel. Everything old is new again. The compact digital camera. Apple introduced the iPhone in 2007, and along with Samsung and other manufacturers, it changed the photography industry. However, iPhone sales didn't really take off until around 2012, and that's when the compact digital camera crash began. The number of compact digital camera introductions in 2016 was one-fifth of what it was the year before. It was bad news for manufacturers. In the years that followed, most cameras introduced were high-end prosumer and professional models. The effects of COVID-19 on the supply chain made 2020 to 2023 extremely quiet. So what were people buying instead of compact digital cameras? They were now taking photos with their smartphone. The early years of smartphone photo-centric features were limited, but they were fine for shots of friends or tourist destinations. As the years passed, however, phones got better. Advances in computational photography, including the ability to merge multiple images, resulted in image quality that was good enough to meet most consumers' demands. Where do compact cameras go from here? In a stunning reverse of fortune, point-and-shoot cameras, which have long been dismissed as defunct, are currently experiencing a major resurgence in both the new and used markets. Sales of point-and-shoots are fueled in part by nostalgia and the perceived shortcomings of smartphone cameras. With expanded feature sets, manual exposure controls, built-in and or external flash support, and optical variety, today's point-and-shoot options can make incredible images with little additional footprint. Recently, the compact digital camera has seen a surge of popularity among concertgoers and patrons of other events where interchangeable lens cameras are forbidden. The reach of the zoom, the 4K video capabilities, autofocus, solid low-light performance, and, of course, portability lend credibility to the digital compact camera platform. In a world dominated by AI-generated, perfectly filtered images, there's something to be said for the raw, unfiltered aesthetic of early digital cameras. Remember your old digital camera that has been collecting dust in a drawer somewhere? You know, the one stashed away years ago after your smartphone camera started letting you take great pictures with having to carry around yet another device? Well, dig it out, thanks to the consistently unexpected taste of Gen Zs. So what's behind this surprising trend? Part of it is just Gen Z and their cultural aesthetics. As a whole, the generation seems to pride itself in rebelling against the keeping up with the Joneses mentality that defined millennials on social media throughout the 2010s. Photographically speaking, Gen Zs are turning away from the perfectly polished look of modern smartphone photos in favor of the quirky charm and retro feel of older digital cameras. It's kind of like how Polaroids surged in popularity as digital cameras became ubiquitous. Some experts speculate that the rising cost of film and ever-increasing price of vintage film cameras may be pushing younger photographers towards more affordable digital alternatives. And who can blame them? A quick search online will reveal that some popular older camera models are fetching prices that would make even seasoned collectors consider selling down their collection. There was renewed attention for premium non-interchangeable lens compact cameras. These so-called point-and-shoot devices are all part of the same Y2K revivalism wave that has embraced other bygone trends from the 2000s, like flip phones and vinyl records. The less-than-perfect technical look of the photos are pretty trendy with Gen Z influences. It's probably time to rummage through the attic and raid drawers because that forgotten digital camera might be your ticket to some extra cash. You can check out online marketplaces like eBay to see what your specific brand and model might be fetching on the secondary market. You might be surprised. Not only that, but you may want to take a trek to some local flea markets and thrift stores where you might find a hidden gem at a bargain price. And even if you're not looking to sell, you could give that old camera a second chance in other ways, namely by using it. Along the way, you might just rediscover the joy of photography with a device that offers a different experience from your smartphone. Moore's Law in the year of 2024. Moore's lead is dead. This is a line of thought championed by many prominent individuals in the fields of electrical and power engineering. But it's quite a controversial one. Just as many people believe Moore's Law is still true today in 2024 as those who believe that it's dead and no longer valid. The debate of whether Moore's Law is dying or already dead has been going on for years. It has been discussed by pretty much everyone, but before we give an answer to that, let's first clarify the meaning of Moore's Law. Moore's Law is the principle that the speed and capability of computers can be expected to double every 2 years as a result of increases in the number of transistors a microchip can contain. Moore's law stems from the observation of Gordon Moore. He was the co-founder of Intel, and he made this statement in 1965. At the time, he said that the number of transistors in a dense integrated circuit has doubled roughly every year and would continue to do so for the next 10 years. In 1975, he revised his observation to say that this would occur every 2 years indefinitely. All I was trying to do was get that message across that by putting more and more stuff on a chip, we were going to make all electronics cheaper. Moore's observation became the driving force behind the semiconductor technology revolution that led to the proliferation of computers and other electronic devices. Moore's law is based on empirical observations made by Gordon Moore. The yearly doubling of the number of transistors on a microchip was extrapolated from observed data in 1965. Over time, the details of Moore's law was amended to reflect the true growth of transistor density. First, the doubling interval was increased to 2 years and then decreased to around 18 months. The exponential nature of Moore's law continued and created decades of opportunity for the semiconductor industry and the electronics that use them. The issue for Moore's law is the inherent complexity of semiconductor process technology, and these complexities have been growing. Transistors are now three-dimensional, and the small feature size of today's advanced process technologies has required multiple exposures to reproduce these features on silicon wafers. This has added extreme complexity to the design process and has slowed down Moore's law. Moore's law is dead? Wrong or right? This slowing down has led many to ask, is Moore's law dead? The simple answer to this is no. Moore's law is not dead. While it's true that chip densities are no longer doubling every 2 years, thus Moore's law isn't happening anymore by its strictest definition. Moore's law is still delivering exponential improvements, albeit at a slower pace. The trend is very much still there. Intel CEO Pat Gelsinger believes that Moore's law is far from obsolete. As a goal for the next 10 years, he announced in 2021 not only to uphold Moore's law, but to outpace it. There are many industry veterans who agree with this. Mario Morales, a program vice president at ITC, said he believes Moore's law is still relevant in theory in a recent interview. If you look at what Moore's law has enabled, we're seeing an explosion of more computing across the entire landscape, he said. It used to be computing was centered around mainframes, and then it became clients, and now edge and endpoints. But they're getting more intelligent, and now they're doing AI inferencing, and you need computing to do that. So Moore's law has been able to continue to really push computing to the outer edge. While the consensus is that Moore's law is slowing down and that it might soon be augmented, it is still driving improvements in processing technology and the amount of progress that followed these improvements. If Moore's law were dead, it simply couldn't have done all this. Presenting Technology Chatter with Benjamin Rockwell and Marty Winston.
Marty Winston joins me now. And Marty, you know, I was just thinking the other day about when I worked back at Radio Shack.
Radio Shack.
I was on the front lines. I know you were off in some.
Oh, I did, but no, I did both. I worked in a store as well.
Oh, really? Okay. I always envisioned
years before I was a headquarters exec.
All right.
Yeah. And believe me, there's no promotion path that gets you from one to the other.
I remember all of the components that we used to carry, and it's unfortunate that the world of hobbyists and obtaining some of these different components is a lot harder these days.
Oh, you know, back in the 70s, I was writing tons of construction project articles for the newsstand electronics magazines. And solderless breadboards made that a little bit easier, but we're still not dealing with super tiny parts back then. Mm-hmm. These days, I just got in 15,000 resistors. Now imagine in the old Radio Shack days, 15,000 resistors would have been 7,500 cards with bubbles on the front,
yes,
hanging on a peg, right?
Well, yeah, if you needed that many, we would have to special order that. You'd wait a few weeks, and it would arrive in a big, huge, big monster box.
With lots of bubble wrap.
Actually, at that point, yeah.
And it would smell like chili for some reason.
Yeah, weird things, yes.
Yeah. Well, I just got 15,000 resistors on a manufacturing reel used in the automated pick and place machines. That's the size of a small pizza, only thinner.
That looks like the personal pan pizza from Pizza Hut, except actually it's a thin crust, it looks like.
Yeah, well, it's 7 inches diameter. Yeah. It's 3/8 of an inch thick.
Yeah, thin crust.
And in the middle.
I was hungry for a minute there. Can you tell?
Let me check that hole in the middle because it's bigger than any donut. The hole in the middle measures 2 inches.
Okay.
Actually, more like 2 1/4. So, you know, they put these on reels and they program, goes there and goes faster than I can, and
sure,
it's done.
Sure, you know? Yeah.
So that's what they're building them for now. They're little tiny cubes, and they the surface mount. And believe me, if you had a soldering iron small enough to get between this little epoxy package and the board to solder it, you still couldn't.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Surface mounting is its own thing. Also got in, and I love these little things. They're less than a penny each. Some little two-piece closed-end things that you can poke wire into.
Okay.
And it won't let go, and it'll connect it to another wire. It's got two places to poke in. You poke them both in, and they're connected. Splicing. You remember what it used to take?
Like wire nuts. Okay.
Yeah. Remember what it used to take to splice wires? Remember when you did it by spiraling one around the other and then soldering and then covering it with tape?
Yes. Yeah. And then there was the crimp connectors.
Crimp connectors. And then
they would always let go.
Oh, yeah. Every time. And these days, it's the marvelous Wago connector from Switzerland.
Yes, yes.
Love those things. Love them. Anyway,
but
splicing.
But at a penny a piece on those, that's a lot cheaper than the Wago connectors.
A lot cheaper than anything, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I had a particular challenge I was looking at for design.
Mm-hmm.
And it involved initially a motion sensor.
Yeah.
But the motion sensor had to come from a friendly country. It couldn't come from anywhere else.
Okay.
And the motion sensor I had came from brand M, and it said made in Japan, but it wasn't. It was made in Thailand, so I couldn't use it.
Okay. Understood.
Now, I was going to use two of those because you had to add lenses to them, and they were fairly primitive, I was going to do a cross the X, so you're only looking at one guy kind of thing. And no, that was out the window. I was also going to run the whole thing on 12 volts and use analog circuits, op amps, comparators, sure. 555 timers, right?
Oh, all yes. of that. Yeah, yeah.
and all of them, they go through a FET to switch in an electromechanical relay. Chunk, right?
Yeah.
Well, when I found a substitute part, which Panasonic has, and the Panasonic part is brilliant. It comes with the lens already integrated. The first parts of the logic are integrated. It's a 5-volt part, and it's got a logic state out, so it goes right into, of all things, a microcontroller. Doesn't that make sense?
Okay, all right, yeah.
Where I could also deal with the timing just by telling it how big a number to count up to. Where I could also go through an extra thing to make a FET turn on instead of the relay.
Okay. All right.
Now, all that meant I needed 5 volts in a 12 volt world. Gosh, you know, there's $3 out the window. Yeah, I won't see you again. Everything else is so much cheaper. And I thought, okay, I wonder how much that controller is going to cost me.
Yeah.
So I priced it and I showed you a sleeve with, I think, 10 of the controllers in it.
Yeah.
And each one of these, in fact, I'm paying less, is 35 cents.
Oh, wow. 35 cents a piece. I'll tell you, those looked a lot like the old fashioned DRAM from way back in the way back in the early days.
Although they're a lot smaller.
Yeah, yeah. But we paid a lot more than that for those. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin, and thank you, Marty. Public service announcements. Computer club meetings in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut tri-state region. Log on to the club website for more information on remote meeting ID. The Brookdale Computer Users Group meets Thursday, December the 5th. Meeting time is 7 p.m., and the presentation is Holiday Tech Gift Ideas. It's a hybrid meeting. Meeting at the Scarsdale Public Library, located at 54 Olmsted Road, Scarsdale, New York, and online virtual meeting via Zoom. Website is wpcug.org. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey meets Friday, December the 6th. Meeting time is 8 p.m., online virtual meeting via Jitsi. Website is acgnj.org. The King's Byte Computer Club meets Tuesday, December 10th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Meeting at the Park Plaza Restaurant, located at 220 Cadman Plaza West in Brooklyn. For more information, 347-278-7320. The New York Amateur Computer Club meets Thursday, December the 12th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. It is a hybrid meeting. Meeting at Studios 353, located at 353 West 48th Street. If you plan to attend the meeting, you must first register via the website nyacc.org for confirmation. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. Website is nyacc.org. The Long Island Macintosh Users Group meets Friday, December the 13th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. And the website is limac.org. Happy Thanksgiving! As we're looking forward to the upcoming holiday season, Black Friday and Cyber Monday are big shopping events. There's always another sale or special event just around the corner on the deals you missed. Make a budget and stick to it. It's easy to get caught up in the excitement of sales, but overspending can lead to financial stress. Decide ahead of time how much you're comfortable spending. Research prices and compare deals. Don't assume the first sale price you see is the best one. Check other retailers and do some research to make sure you're actually getting a good deal. Beware of impulse purchases. Just because an item's on sale doesn't mean you need it. Ask yourself if it's something you actually use and enjoy. The most important thing is to focus on quality time with loved ones and creating meaningful memories this holiday season. Count your blessings. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN, live streaming on the Internet. Podcast of the program is available on prn.live on the Internet. If you have any questions for us, just send us an email addressed to hank@pcradioshow.org. In the meantime, stay in touch and remember to do regular backups. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Michael Horowitz, Benjamin Rockwell, and Marty Winston, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and healthy until we meet again, same time, same station next week.